The name is Ajay Locascio, a.k.a. Gambit. Remember it. And you're listening to the special episode of Power of X-Men. Hope you survive the experience, mon ami.
What the fuck, man?
How do you think I feel? It's so funny, people being like, no, and like mad at me. And I'm like, hey, no one's asking how I feel. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to process.
The entire internet right now, bro, is just like dead. Because Gambit, like, man, the way that Gambit went out, I mean, that was an iconic exit.
Keep thinking of Theoden, where he's like, if this is to be our end, then we shall make such an end. Is I keep thinking of that line where it's like, yeah, I mean, it's a hell of an ending for that character. And I was gutted when I found out that this was going to be the trajectory, because it was like, welcome to the show. We're killing you. And I was like, oh my God. So I had, it's a hell of an exit. And I'm thrilled to be a part of it, but also sad at the same time.
So last week I was with Lenore.
Yes.
And we all met at our San Diego Comic-Con 2022 party. And that was the first night that you had met Lenore. And I'm curious, what was like the first impression you had of Lenore when you met her?
She was intimidating, I think, as my first, because she's so colorful and literally colorful, where she's got like a bright yellow jacket and the giant earrings and Rogue all over her. And it was also in that context, we were at an extremely loud bar during the hype of Comic-Con. And so it wasn't known that I was doing Gambit. So I was still very, because this is 2 years ago. So yeah. I was still very secretive, and I was a little concerned about, like, is someone from Disney going to come tackle me if I admit anything? I was intimidated. I think that's the best way to describe it. She's very big and lovely and kind, but because we were screaming at each other over the top of this music and bar noise, I didn't get a real good sense of her. It wasn't until I met her. I guess we get to work together at some point a little bit later for some pickup or something, and we actually got to be people as opposed to being in a bar, that I was like, oh my God, she's lovely. She feels like someone I've known for a very long time, and I don't know why that is. I mean, I guess it's because I grew up with the cartoon, but just her as a person is a very comfortable, sweet human being. And she's lovely. But my initial reaction was fear, I think, or intimidation. It's like meeting a queen.
Well, I'm forgetting what the bar was. I think it was called Cowgirls. And we didn't know that you or Bo were going to come in. And you guys came in and I was introduced to you really quickly. And they were like, oh, this is going to be Gambit in X-Men 97. And I was just like blown away. And I was kind of like speechless, because you have such, you know, if you're talking about Lenore and like sort of the power she has, I mean, I feel like you sort of have that power as well.
Well, yeah. Thank you. I don't feel like that, but I appreciate that. I was so turned around in that whole night, because we had just done an entire day of Gremlins PR, and that was a real weird whirlwind for me. So I was still in that headspace. And at the time, I didn't realize it, which is really funny, is I was having an allergic reaction to the hotel shampoo, we found out later. So progressively throughout the night, my head became more and more like swollen. And it was this funny thing where the next day I was like, I think I'm having an allergic reaction. So it was like this weird, I now know, I've been to like a doctor that's like, yes, don't use random fragrances from hotels. Apparently you have an allergy to it. So it was just a whirlwind of experiences that night. So I appreciate that I came in intimidating. It might have been the slow swelling of my face.
Was it rosemary or coconut? Like, what was the flavor or like scent for it?
I don't know. I have no idea. Generic hotel flower smell, whatever that is. Because I didn't know. I thought I was like dying of something. And then it happened again later when I bought like a new shampoo, and my doctor was like, ah, you're allergic to fragrances. And I was like, okay, cool. So it was there was a lot going on through my head. And plus I was in a rush, because I had to go from that party or that bar to then go to the Gremlins sort of rap thing. And it was a lot. It was a lot of stuff. So I barely remember it. And wait, also the nervousness of like, I can't tell anyone I'm Gambit. It's really wild.
Was that your first San Diego that you went to? I mean, I'm assuming not, given your career, but was that the first with Gremlins and like sort of having to like be Gambit incognito? Was that like the first San Diego Comic-Con that you went that was like really big for you?
It was different. Yeah, I mean, I guess the I had done New York Comic Con for Voltron, and that was intense. And then I had done San Diego for Back to the Future, but we were just at a booth signing stuff to sort of promote the game, and so it was a different experience. It was basically just like from hotel to hotel to hotel, where they'd have all these different media setups, and it was just me and the cast of Gremlins. And just talking about Gremlins. So, yeah, it was different. It was definitely different. And also just weird to be there for Gremlins, was very surreal.
Well, I want to talk to you about Gremlins and your entire career, but right now, the internet is mourning for one Remy LeBeau. I mean,
Yes.
what, come on, bro. What message do you have for everyone out there right now? I mean, me and Slayer Fest 98 literally knocked on Lenore's door here in Manhattan, and we were like, we're not okay. And she's like, it's okay, sugar. So
Oh.
now you have to tell us because that death. Ah, can't. I can't.
I mean, message. God, what message would I have? I don't know if I have a message so much as it's like Gambit has always been sort of considered like the other character or the weird character, I think, especially by people that aren't the slightly older generation who didn't grow up with Gambit as like a main character from the cartoon and stuff, always kind of thought of this goofy guy. And I've always, I think a lot of fans that are roughly our age are have always loved him and seen him as this really deep, fun, garish, colorful person. And so to see him go through so many waves of emotion and the betrayal and the hurt and then the acceptance of his relationship with Rogue and where he stands. And even him just saying like just friends, mon ami, is like so heartbreaking. And then for him to sort of step up and make such a sacrifice in such a cool way too. I mean, I think it's just such a great. It's sad because you want to see Gambit just flipping around doing all kinds of stuff for years and years, but it's a hell of a moment. And I think that for as a lifelong Gambit fan to see so many people expressing love and joy and in getting to see him be so fully realized, it's just going to bring people back to the comics and the original cartoon and hopefully create more, I don't want to say awareness, it's not a cause, but just more love for Remy and his character. So I think it's in many ways, as much as this has been a mourning, it's been a celebration of what's so cool about Gambit. And the amount of art and messages I've been sent has been staggering. I can't believe it's only been a week since that episode happened because I've been just being bombarded by stuff and friends, people I haven't spoken to in years, messaging me and emailing me and text. It's been wild. So I've just sort of become this conduit through which people direct their mourning and joy and yeah, it's really bizarre. I don't have a specific message other than, in a way, this has just been a celebration of how cool Gambit is. And, there's so much Gambit content out there that hopefully there's places for people to go and still enjoy where he's out doing his thing.
What's the most left field message that you have gotten this week?
Think people trying to catfish me is probably the weirdest one. I
Wait,
think
how are
that's.
people trying to catfish you?
Yeah, just well, so when I went to WonderCon, there was like one or two people that was just like, the best way to contact me for a podcast is to go just send me a DM on Instagram, which isn't always true, especially now that it's just flooded. But there were like two specific people who were really kind, and I was like, that's probably the best way. And so looking through my DMs, I'm like, oh, is this the person? And it's just someone, it's like one of those things like image request. And it's just like, hey, if you're ever in this state, check. And I'm like, or whatever it is. It's just people trying to, and I'm like, I can't, I'm not, no, delete, block. I don't know if they're catfishing me or whatever, but it's just very weird. It's a lot of like bots and stuff like that, or real people, who knows. But I think that's been the weirdest thing. It has nothing to do with Gambit, just people that are sliding in my DMs that I'm like, okay, you're not, this is not X-Men related. This is something else. But as far as the Gambit goes, I don't know. I mean, I, God, I've heard, it's mostly just people screaming into me is what it feels like, as I am the void. and people feel like they must express their mourning. And I totally get it. I mean, I feel like the thing that people are discounting, or I said this sort of earlier, is that I had to mourn the hell out of this when this happened, because I was handed my dream job essentially, and then it was ripped away from me within 5 episodes, and I was like gutted, because they had to call me, like Bo and Jake and Meredith called me to sort of like tell me that, like, hey, welcome to the show, but and this is after I had done like 2 episodes or something. They were like, yeah, we're gonna be killing you off. And I was like, are you guys insane? Like, I was like, people are gonna riot. I was like, Gambit's so beloved. I was like, you guys are crazy. But once I read the script and stuff, I was like, okay, this is really, really important and really cool.
To piggyback off of what you were saying, I think there's been a lot of reaction to this episode, specifically because I think Gambit, and I love Gambit very much. I love the Lee Weeks original miniseries that we got from him in like 94. I think Gambit historically has been a character that has been style over substance. That is not to say that style is not really great in its own right, but this is one of the stories that we've gotten with Gambit that has been so poetically, masterfully like rendered. And a large part of it has to do with the writing. It has to do with your acting and the fact that we actually got meaning to his relationship with him and Rogue. Specifically, the fact that when Rogue is dancing with Magneto, she's here like, oh, there are some things that are deeper than skin. Right, which is historically something that's going on with Rogue, and that what she has with Remy goes beyond just physical touch. And the way you all delivered it, I mean, that's why everyone is mourning right now, because like it is just like Remy was like caught in the middle with everything that was going on with like Magneto and her, but also he was very understanding, he was very fleshed out. There was more to him with Rogue than just her physical attributes. He legitimately loved Rogue. And that ending where she can finally touch him, but he is, I'm sorry to say it like this, Familia, I'm so sorry. He is a corpse.
Oh,
Oh,
that's so
man.
horrible. That sucks to say.
What was it like when you saw that final animation where Gambit was a corpse?
I hate it.
It's
I
a
hate it.
really tra bro, it is such a traumatizing image. And I'm like a 40-year-old man, and I still like I'm seeing that and like I'm dead.
I mean, it's gutting. It's so. So I didn't get to. Obviously, I read it. And we did it, and we did the line over and over again. Remember, it was like, I remember at some point we weren't sure with the storyboards whether he was going to yell it out and this was going to be this big moment or whether he was just going to say it. And I was leaning more towards what, you saw, where it was like it's more intimate, which I'm really happy with, and I'm really glad that that came across the way, because just screaming "Remember!" it would have been really weird. But when I went in to do ADR, which is like, when you go in and re-record some of your stuff or they add stuff. Yeah, it sucked. I was really proud of what the team had done, but it hurts. It's a character that I love so much, and you identify with these characters that you get to play. They're not. There's a weird thing where I feel like people are like, "You are the character now," and it's like, no, we get to sort of breathe a little bit of life into them, and to suddenly see that this character has their journey has ended. It hurts. It hurts a lot, and it feels like a real, like a friend that has passed in some way. Especially when you, this is such a big deal for me. I mean, X-Men is such a large portion of my fandom, or different fandoms that I obsess over. And so, yeah, it was very painful. I mean, I felt very proud to be part of this journey. What I said to the team was like, "Listen, if he had one line, I'd be honored to be any part of that." To get to be Gambit in any capacity is so surreal. I mean, I can't believe I'm even saying these words, because it's like I've dressed up as Gambit like 3 times for different, like for Halloween and Comic-Con and stuff. Like, this is a thing that I've loved for so long. So to be any part of his journey is such a surreal honor. But yeah, the other side of that is seeing those images, very hard.
Okay, wait, hold up. I didn't know you cosplayed or dressed up as Gambit for
I
Halloween and
had
other
there's a
Comic Cons.
photo
Really?
on Instagram somewhere that against my better judgment, I was like, I gotta post this, because it is,
I didn't see it. I pride myself on doing deep dives. I didn't see that.
It's Wolverine holding the photo, and then it's me at like 19 or 18 or maybe younger, dressed as Gambit at like New York Comic Con or something. And it's pretty hilarious. Maybe I'm like 17. I don't remember. But yeah, I don't know. I'm such a big nerd for this stuff.
Okay.
But yeah.
But wait, so you're cosplaying as Gambit, New York Comic Con. You're dressing up for him as Halloween, and then you go to WonderCon in his infamous crop top. I mean, what is that moment like for you, though? I mean, you do have to have a moment and be like, wow, look at this journey I've done from when I was a teenager to where I'm at now.
It doesn't make any sense. I think that's the thing that's really hard, is I've been lucky to voice characters that I absolutely obsess over. Like, I mean, Marty McFly was like my first thing, which is a character that I'm so obsessed. There's like a pillar or Mount Rushmore of characters I'm obsessed with, and I'm so lucky that I've gotten to voice a significant amount of those. I don't know if it's just, if it's luck or just the pure amount of time that I spend thinking of these characters and doing voices, you know, on my own, where it's not, you know, when an audition shows up, I've already done Han Solo or for thousands of hours on my own, you know, so it's like, or Marty McFly, where I've done that for so long beforehand, same with Gambit, where it's just something that's been in my head. And the fact that something that seems utterly useless has now come to play in my life, where I'm now getting to be, again, part of Gambit's journey. Like, I don't know whether to be, to throw up, or, you know, or to be so, you know, it's so surreal that my brain can't handle it. It's really, really weird. I wish I could say I'm just like, this is amazing, I'm so excited, which I am. But there's also the sort of surrealness of being like, I could imagine someone who grew up playing Batman or wanting to be Batman, and then suddenly you're Batman in the Batman movie. It's the same sort of like, you have to distance yourself or you'll go insane. And so I just feel like someone let me play with this action figure for a little bit of time. And I'm so honored that now other people are telling me how good I did with the action figure, you know, but there's no way for me to absorb it. I still can't. I'll never absorb Marty or Han Solo or Figment or any of these characters that I've done, because it's not Gizmo. It's not real to me. I feel very blessed isn't the right word. Lucky beyond words.
A sidebar, Figment is my favorite Disney character. Figment. I'm a Florida boy, Boro.
I've got a little Figment in here.
Let me see Figment.
I got my little Figment. I know. Dude. I'm obsessed. It's so
Epcot,
so...
1980. Like, literally that era, man. Like,
it's so I have ring. When I got the Figment thing, my friend who's an Imagineer now, my buddy Nick got me a shirt that's like from the opening of Epcot, and I'm afraid to wear it. I've worn it to Imagineering to like record stuff, but I'm so afraid to wear it anywhere else, because it's like, it's older than me, you know, it's like it's such a relic. And it's but yeah, Figment was one of those surreal ones where I had studied Figment's voice for years and years before getting to voice him. And you know, it's one video game. I got to voice him in Disney Speedstorm, but still, that means so much to me. But I had done studies where I'd listened to Billy Barty's voice over and over and over again, not just from childhood, but literally in this booth where I'm listening and re-recording and trying to match his voice. So then when the audition came up, I was like, oh my God, I've been secretly studying for this by accident. And it's just because it's an obsession. It's like when you tinker like a, you know, with anything, if you're playing with Lego or whatever it is, it's something I'm doing on my own. And then when the opportunity shows up, I'm like, holy crap, wait, I can use this for real? It's surreal. But yeah, I love Figment. We need more Figment. That's one of my biggest things is, yeah, we need
I'm sorry to go off script on this, but because I'm such a big Figment fan,
I feel like there's a crossover between X-Men and Figment, right? There's got
to
be.
There has to be.
Yeah.
Are you able to do the Figment voice if I asked you to?
Sure. But here's the
I'm
thing.
I'm sorry.
No, it's pitched up. That's the thing.
I gotcha.
So what's in the game actually weirdly isn't, but I would do it when I like auditions and stuff where I was like, by like 6%, if you pitch up my voice, that's about the right. But Figment's just like, wow, wow, wow. I'm trying to think of a line now. Like, can they imagine too? There's a sound.
You have no idea, dude. I was literally in the 1980s going to Epcot, obsessed with Figment, and like,
same.
You know,
I love all the plushies that were like,
yes, yeah. I have them back home, and my dogs who are no longer with us, we would call them Figmoths. You know what I mean? Like, and you don't understand that character means so much like how Gambit has meant a lot to me, because I've talked about this on the podcast before, where when I picked up that first like mini series from Gambit in the
The
90s.
one with the gold letters you're talking about
Yeah,
with the
yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
I have that on my
That's it.
desk right now. Yeah, I saved up and bought that, and there was a little comic shop in Raritan, New Jersey that had the first appearance of Gambit, and I like obsessed over it, and I saved up until I could buy it. I think at the time it was like $30 or $40, but at that
Yeah.
age that was an un that was, a Game Boy. It was an ungodly amount of money.
It was an
So
insane amount of money, especially, and like you wish you could go back now and like pay those $30, $40
yeah.
for it.
There was someone who had, I think it was the first appearance of Spider-Man for like $1,000, and
Oh
I was
man.
like begging my dad, which is that, it's absurd. My dad's not gonna buy the first appearance of Spider-Man, or X-Men was like, I think slightly less. It was like 800. I was like, Dad, trust me, it's gonna be worth so much. And now it's like,
Oh.
$100,000. So.
I had the same fights with my dad at International Mall in Miami with an X-Men number one. I did not
Ugh.
win it, and
It's
now,
crazy how much it's worth now, and like
no.
I will never. I mean, my dad's looking at this like, my dad had a pretty decent understanding of comics and stuff, but he was like, no, and I'm like, yeah. In hindsight, of course not. Why would he? Like, okay, now we'll save this in a vault until whatever year, until it's worth $100,000. But yeah, what were we talking about? Figment? I don't know. First
Figment,
appearance.
Gambit, yeah, that first miniseries with Gambit. And I remember, I mean, I grew up in South Florida, never left South Florida until I was 17. So the only thing I knew about New Orleans was Gambit. And Gambit to me was such a cool character. And I know in past interviews you've said that like you kind of figured out when you were getting those sides for what the project would become X-Men 97, that you kind of figured out you were doing Gambit. And you were happy to just audition for Gambit because there's no one else you want to audition
He's
for
the only
other
one
than
I wanted to.
Gambit.
Yeah,
Why?
my
What?
agent
Why
hates that
Gambit?
story. Why Gambit?
Why?
I mean, he's
Why
my favorite
Gambit?
X-Men. He's my favorite X-Men. That's the reason. I mean, it's no. When I was a kid, that's my X-Men. Like, that was my ex-person, I guess, is he was the one I was most drawn to. He was the weirdest and the coolest. And he was also, like, part of the team, but not really in the team structure. He'd go off and do his own stuff. I mean, I guess I've always kind of been attracted to those, like, pseudo Han Solo
Yeah,
characters that are kind of like,
anti-heroes. Yeah.
yeah, where they're like, I got my own stuff to do. Because I feel like that's kind of how I am, where I'm like never willing to join a group in a lot of ways. I'm always kind of like, yeah, I got other stuff and what I'm more interested in. Or like, and so, but he just exudes this coolness that I think we all aspire to, where it's
He's
like, he
so
never
cool.
seems bothered. He's always like, who throws cards? That's absurd. Like, that's, imagine how difficult that would be to throw cards. And I can't even get a card to go more than like 2 feet. And because I've tried, trust me. But yeah, I mean, when I saw that breakdown of all the characters, I want to say it was between 20 and 30 different characters, and I just was like, this is, I'm only pouring all my energy into this, because I'm a strong believer in just like, well, quality over quantity, or just putting everything into one thing in to some degree. I mean, like, if there was, I don't know. He's all I wanted. That's, I mean, as much as I'd be thrilled to be Cyclops or Wolverine or anyone else, I would always be kind of looking over at whoever was voicing Gambit and be like, damn it.
And it was an open audition, right? Where it was like anyone and everyone. There was no short list.
Yeah,
Because I
no, it
believe for
was.
Han Solo, there was a short list, right?
Yeah,
And
for Han, I had to like work my way through the ranks for years to finally get on a list to audition. And so that was a process. But as far as I know, for X-Men, it was just open to everybody. Everyone, I guess, with a VO agent or who had access to that, I don't know, that those files. So yeah, the fact that I got a call back is like insane, insane. And the fact that I
Yeah.
landed it is also insane, because I don't, I'm very lucky to have voiced characters and other stuff. And but that doesn't come with, I'm not Nolan North or one of those people that everyone knows already. I came in like every schlub off the street and was just kind of like, hey, what's up? I really love this character. They didn't really have any understanding of who I was. It wasn't like there was, oh, we've worked with him before. So, I mean, I had done a bit part in one of the Witcher animated things with Bo and Meredith, but
Okay.
I literally was just like, oh, that's nice. And like, that was it. Like, I said, like, one
<That's>...
little thing. It wasn't like, get that guy. So yeah, I was at the same level as far as I'm aware as anyone else. I don't know if they looked into Voltron or any of that stuff, but As far as I know, they just called me in and was like, that sounds good.
Wait, what did Bo and Meredith say once they found out it was you and you had worked on The Witcher? Was there any like, hey, we remember you? Like, oh, we're so happy to have you here.
We talked about it briefly. They were like, yeah, we remember we worked on Witcher with you, but it was so long ago. And again, so brief. I did one session where it was just, I forget, young Sven, whose character I have only a vague understanding of. But I asked him, I was like, what about. I had the same thing with Gremlins, where I was like, why did you choose my audition? And they were just like, you just sounded the most like the character. And I was like, all right,
I mean, I
that's good
speak
enough for
for all
me.
of X-Men fandom when I say yes, you sound so much like the character. And
Thank
I'm
you.
curious, was there ever any pressure when either on your own or somewhat during the process to sound like Chris Potter?
Yeah,
Or
very much
yeah.
so. I mean, that was
You're
my
like, yeah.
focus. Yeah, of course. When I first got the audition, there was a file of him, and so there was like five lines that were like verbatim his lines, and then five lines that were just from the comic or were maybe from the series, but I wasn't supposed to just nail those exact intonations. They wanted me to sort of do my own thing, which is pretty common with voice match stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, I just got as close as I could to Chris's reads, and he's got a very specific husk to his voice and sound, and it's this weird combination of youth and husk that's a real weird balance. And then just trying to do my own stuff. I think I added maybe I might have even said the name is Gambit, remember it, at like the end. Like I might have tagged, which I'll sometimes do with auditions, is improvise a couple lines. But yeah, I mean, I just tried to make it sound like him and then went, all right, well, they're not going to get me for this. They're going to call him or someone else. So yeah, I don't know. You basically, it's like firing a cannon into the ocean. You're just like, yeah, anytime I book anything, it feels like a miracle. So,
How did you make it your own though? How did you make the voice of Gambit your own? Because again, we love Chris. Chris is an incredible human. We've met him several times, but your Gambit also sounds and feels very distinct. So what did you do to like put your own spin on it?
I mean, so in the beginning, it was mostly just a voice match, where I was just like, all right, I'm doing Chris at 20 something or 30 or whatever his age was. And then once we got into the booth and we started doing it, we were really just playing around. I think once you start playing around with like, how sexy is he? How, you know, how
Very
much is he
sexy.
how
Very
much
is the
very
answer.
sexy. Very sexy, more of me. But we
You're
don't
making me
tell Disney
blush
I
now,
said that.
bro. Like,
Oh
Jesus.
no, amazing. But that was a big thing, is like they were like, Gambit is he exudes confidence and sexiness. There's a sex appeal to Gambit, and I think that that's not. It's not controversial to say that, is that's kind of, you know, what about Gambit's other powers? Like, that is part of it. His charm is such a. So we kind of, it was like adjusting volume is where we'd go back and forth with especially with Meredith. I feel like she'd be like, dial up the sexiness, or Beau would be like, sexier, or like more charming and more teasing. And so sort of, you know, a lot, honestly, with like Han Solo, there's a lot of parallels to how they sort of carry themselves, where Han Solo is a little more cranky. Gambit's a little more, you know, charming. He's more charming. So I think inherently, once you stop worrying about repeating a line and sounding like someone over and over again, and you start to play with what's available, it just starts to become its own thing. And one of the big things, and I know a lot of it didn't make it in, but I just kept trying to bring different Cajun phrases and things into the script. So I'd read the script and I'd be like, oh, I could put this little piece in here because I have a friend. Who's gonna get tired of me mentioning him? Chet, who's from Louisiana and who's Cajun, and his grandparents, you know, or have all these phrases and things. And so I'd ask him in secret, "What about this? You know, like if someone was saying this, what kind of coffee would Gambit?" Like at some point, I tried to get café au lait and like, you know, with the beignets, but we went with cappuccino, I guess. And
I love a
when he sees,
cafe
yes, same. But when he sees Genosha for the first time, I think it might be the only line that made it in. There's a phrase that means like, wow. He goes, Kia. That's like a wow, you know, expression, or oh my God, or like mon Dieu, which I think he says when he like falls out of the X jet or the Blackbird, whatever we're calling it. And I tried as much as I could to insert little things, and me and Meredith, especially because Meredith has some French that she understands, would kind of try to layer things in. So that's another element of it, is trying to find the Cajunness of it, but then also still sounding as much like the original character and what was established, 30 years ago, before we had maybe more of an awareness of what that sounds like, or it was as easily available. Because, how do you, would you would have to fly to New Orleans and just talk to a bunch of people. You couldn't just go to the library and be like, what's that accent? And also listen to podcasts, Cajun podcasts and stuff, just to hear them talk is definitely an element.
Wait, I didn't know there were Cajun podcasts
You Catchin', I think is one of them, is one of the y'all Catchin', I think is the name of one. I wonder if they'll hear this, but there's certain
I mean,
things that
I'm
I'm just
sending it to them. That's
I
100% certain.
think that's what but like there's things, and there's also an app that's like how to use Cajun phrases that I would
Oh,
refer to
interesting.
for reference. That's this really brilliant app that it's just, I guess, this guy, like the son recording his parents using different phrases. So yeah, I would try to put as much of that in there, but whatever comes out, because you do a million takes and sometimes you improvise, and there are things where I go, oh, that was one of my things, that was one of my ideas, but we tried so many different things just to make it feel lived in. But he's a comic character with an established voice, so you can only do so much.
That's very fair. So you got the script for Remember It. They talked to you around episode two that Gambit was gonna die midway through the season.
I hate hearing
What
it.
was your reaction
I
when you read
mourned.
this?
I like legitimately mourned. I was absolutely depressed. I mean, like to say I was depressed is not, is like an understatement, because it's like, we knew there was a certain amount of episodes that were going to happen, and then suddenly that was ripped out from under me, where I'm like, oh my God, like to
Wait, so
begin.
when you signed on, they were like, oh, this is how many episodes we're going to be doing, and then you find out you're dying, five episodes in. Okay. I'm sorry, I
I mean,
just
I
want to
knew the
clarify that.
10 episodes, and I was like, 10 episodes, and then and it was just ripped away. And so it was this feeling of like, oh God. My friend has this horrible phrase that I don't believe, but I thought of it that day, where he goes, sometimes the best day of your life is the worst day of your life. And I don't remember what that was in reference to, but I thought of it that day because I was specifically like so excited and then immediately knocked down, because it was this feeling of like, shit, I can I say shit?
Yeah, you can
Loss.
say
I
you can
all right,
cuss
well,
as much as you. Gambit, you can cuss as much as you.
I gotta
Wait,
keep it.
can you say shit in
No.
Gambit's voice?
No, I
No.
can't. This is a Disney program.
Fair
I
enough.
have a I, yes. I think you could say mert, but that's different.
Wait,
That's in
what does merit
French.
mean?
Mert, it means basically poop in French.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
I think like the Pink Panther would say that all the time. Anyway, not the Steve Martin one. Maybe he did.
The Steve Martin one with Beyoncé in it?
Is that what it is? A
I don't know. I
hamburger,
haven't
where he
seen it in
would.
a while.
I've only seen like the trailer and the one clip about the hamburger. What were we talking about?
Okay, no,
Yeah, I was
you
deeply
got the
sad.
script. You were upset because not only are you voicing this character, but you're also a big stan of the character.
Yes, I am, for sure. And so it was really painful. I mean, like, and it sounds weird to say, but yeah, I mean, it's a job on one level where you're thinking about like, holy crap, I got this awesome job. But then it's also a character that I love. If it was a character I'd never heard of, I would be like, oh, all right, this sucks because I want to be part of a big thing. But then also, I don't know who this is, but it's Gambit. Gambit's such an important thing as a kid that, I used to take like shower curtains my parents would throw away and like run around with them and be like, I'm Gambit. Like there's it's something that lives in me.
Wait, I'm
Look,
sorry. How
there's
did baby AJ
I'm
sound?
Gambit. Yeah, that's what he sounded like. It's
Wait,
so
can we
it's.
do a compare and contrast? Baby Gambit and now modern Gambit.
Oh man, I'm Gambit. What would be? I'm Gambit. Yeah, I don't know if that's. I used to say
That's
to my friend
hysterical.
all the time, my buddy Ben, we'd go, "Are you an assassin or a thief?" It was just like a thing we'd say in the hallway to each other randomly, as like, I don't know, remember what the reasoning was, but we would just say that in high school. Anyway, yeah, I was gutted to answer your question. I was very, very sad, and but then again, once I read the script, I was like, "This is really cool, and I cannot believe you guys are doing this," and I. Also didn't realize to what degree how adult it would be or how mature the content would be. And then once I started seeing the animation, I was like, oh, we've grown up with the fans. Not that the original show wasn't adult, it's extremely adult, but it's now there's an edge to it that I feel like you can only get away with like a premium sort of show that knows its audience. And so we're at a whole other level of coolness.
Yeah, it's funny because we've had Eric, Julia Leewald, we've had Larry Houston and Margaret Lesh on the podcast, and we talked about the idea of family programming. And family programming in the 90s was that you didn't write down to children, you wrote up to children.
Right.
And I think if there's something that's very evident that Bo, Jake, Meredith have all done with X-Men 97 is that they know the original series was written up to children. And now this is on the same level of those kids who have grown up. And they trust yeah. that their kids, the younger audience, will be able to keep up. And I think the proof is in the final product. I mean, everyone's talking about X-Men 97. It's insane.
It's crazy. It's almost scary how many people are like scary from the sense of like, well, you guys just have to keep being excellent, which is a heck of a, I mean, I, so far, you know, so far so good, but like, it's a high bar to keep hitting. And so, and the fact that we got here so quickly is so rare.
Right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate, man.
It's wild. Yeah. I, you know, it's a testament to how talented they are, and hopefully they know that and they can keep, you know, keep up that sort of momentum. Although I know it's challenging, but they have so many awesome stories to pull from. And, you know, they're with a comic property, I feel like that's such a gift that you get to pull from so many stories and sort of create your own best of, which what yeah. makes Batman the Animated Series and, you know, the original X-Men so interesting is you get sort of these best of stories of things that are already great. And so they get to sort of build on top of that in a way that is both stressful because you want to do justice to these stories, but then also is a gift, you know, to some degree. You get to pick and choose. You're like kit bashing, to use a term from like prop making, where you're using yeah. pieces of something that already exists and creating a Death Star or an X-Wing. You know, it's like, oh, cool. I do a lot of prop making. So that's that's around.
Oh, I know. And we're going to ask a lot about that. But before before we get into the rest of your career and your prop making, one final question that we need to ask here.
Please.
Because there was something about Gambit that took us all by surprise, and it was right there in his first scene in episode one, which was the crop top. Did you have, and okay, this is a multi-layered question. One, did you know the crop top was coming? Two, what was your impression when you saw it? And three, did you even think the internet was going to go crazy with that crop top?
No, there's so many other things I thought people would go crazy about. The crop top was the last thing I thought would be on anyone's radar. I think it's said in the script that he's wearing a crop top. I believe it was in there was he was wearing something silly, but it was I want to say he was wearing like a chef's outfit or something. Maybe I'm wrong. Honestly, it was probably just a crop top, and I'm picturing what was in the 90s cartoon. But I remember him wearing something funny and being like, oh, that's great. Of course he would be wearing that. And then when I saw it, I went, that's brilliant. That's exactly what that should be. I mean, why wouldn't he? He's in his home, you know, doing his thing, and he's Gambit, you know. He's got abs. He looks great. You know, he's trying to sort of woo Rogue as he normally is. So there's – it just felt perfect. There's no other way to describe it. And I was like, yep, that's Gambit. And I think it doesn't get better than that when something just is the character. And then the reaction was bananas. I mean, I didn't know that was coming at in any capacity. I would be a nut to think that people would be, you never know what the internet's going to grab onto. Yeah. So it's like the Willy Wonka experience where everyone was going crazy over that. Like, I'm sure no one there expected that to happen. And so for me, you know, the crop top thing is like, oh, this is like one of my friends just sent me a picture of, they're like, hey, I'm just hanging out with someone who I work with, and crop top Gambit's the back of their phone. And like, I'm like, that's not their background, but the actual case. And I'm like, that's a high level of craziness. Someone I don't know who's just, yeah, that's awesome. And not crazy as in they're wrong, crazy for me to be like, wow, that thing I saw in a moment that was just on the screen is now proliferated, and the amount of cosplays and art, it's incredible. I mean,
it was
so
overnight.
Cool.
It was overnight.
Yeah,
and
just yeah.
We went to the X-Men 97 premiere, and I saw the crop top. It looked great. I mean, of course, Gambit looks so cool. But I was like, oh, that's so awesome. Everyone's gonna love the show. But I wasn't thinking of the crop top. And then when the when the episode premiered, the next morning I woke up and I had probably like 50 DMs from people being like, do you think I can, from Gambit cosplayers being like, do you think I could do it like this? Like, blah, 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 blah. Send me different wigs. Send me different, like, colors of shirts and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't know. Ask Art of Lucas. Ask AJ. Ask anyone else who is working on this. And it was just, it was one of those things that I think brought so much joy to fans. And I really wanted to, like, flag it because, like, Of course, it's a very iconic, sexy look, but I think it also put just a smile on people's faces at a time in the world where we're not always just smiling and enjoying something, right? Because everything's so polarizing now on the internet, everything, blah, blah, blah. But Gambit in his crop top, everyone just loved it. It was a slam dunk. It was a home run, whatever sports analogy, because I don't know sports, but
I don't either.
I think if I can speak on behalf of like X-Men fandom, like that was such a joy, so much fun. Everyone enjoyed it, bro.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, I had nothing to do with it. I just got to show up and then receive praise. And it's so wild. Because I saw it and went, yep, that's perfect. Moving on. Like that, you guys nailed it. Like I remember having a visceral like laugh and being like, that's it. That's brilliant. Like, correct. Like if I, for some reason, I was writing the show and said, what if he was in a pink crop top? I'd be like, yes, that's exactly what he should be. I mean, think about what he wears to fight. He's got
I
a
know.
pink chest, that is not, it's some sort of molded plastic or something. He's like, I wanted to have abs, and it's just this pink fuchsia thing with a collar and it's insanity. And he's got a long coat and the like boots that look like they're made of like plastic.
Oh, I
He's
know.
nuts. Like his style choices are crazy. So it's got to be, reflected in his day-to-day wear. And I love that. It's just perfect. He's not going to be wearing normal clothing. He's going to be wearing what's trendy or what's the most like, oh, all right. This guy doesn't mess around. I'm so glad that people, again, didn't expect it, but so glad that people took to it. And hopefully this will be a meme for a while. Because to me, I think it's, and the fact that he wore it again in another episode, I was like, oh, okay, this is the
Yeah.
thing. This
It's
is
never
his.
going away. This is going to haunt
I
you for
hope he
the
wears it all
rest
the
of
time.
your career, bro.
Good. I'm glad because I love it. I couldn't be more excited to be haunted by Crop Top Gambit. That's phenomenal. The internet also has such a short memory, so you hope things like this that are fun stay around and don't get outplayed. But I think that as a piece of Gambit's history, the crop top is deeply ingrained now, which I'm thrilled to be any representative of. Because yeah, again, I love Gambit, and it's such an interesting little piece of his story now. It's just his crop top.
I agree. Listen, I want to move past Gambit because I want to ask about your career,
That's
but
fine.
but
What I'm here for.
for the period on the sentence, I have to tell you how Gambit has been done in the series, and a large part is your talent and what you brought to the role. I
Thank
mean,
you.
this is going to be canon for the character in comics. People are going to be talking about this forever because again, I think to reiterate the point, Gambit has never been written like this. Gambit has never been portrayed like this. And it has brought in so much joy to us fans that this is just going to be the new canon going forward. So congratulations, man.
Thank
I mean,
you.
really.
That's
Thank you. Thank you
awesome
for
to
your
hear.
talent. Thank you
Oh,
for
phew.
your talent.
Thank you for accepting it.
I mean,
I
X
don't know.
fans are a little, we're a little temperamental, so we don't always accept
Yeah.
everything. But
No,
Gambit 100%.
that's awesome. I mean, I can't emphasize enough how much that means to me, because I had to say I was nervous is an understatement. I was so worried about being, to be burned at the stake when this was all announced and people first heard my voice. And you don't know how people are going to react in the same way that I didn't expect Crop Top Gambit to become a thing, in the same way that I didn't expect people to accept me, because to me, I am also in line. I'm the guy sitting at the panel going, why didn't you bring back Chris? I also do not have an answer to that. I don't know what it is other than I know that he really loves Cable now, and that's really
Oh, he's
cool.
so.
And
I'm so sorry, Mom. I cried. I literally cried
I'm
when
oh
he
my
said that
God,
as
that
Cable.
guy
Oh,
got me.
God.
But I
I
got to speak
know.
to him briefly, and he was like, I love Cable. Cable's great. He's like, they couldn't have chosen. He said to me, which was incredible and weird, he was like, they couldn't have chosen a better replacement for me and or a better person. I was like, thank you. Like, you're my Gambit. And so,
Did you just
but
hug him in that moment? And you're
I
like,
just was like, he's also a lot taller than me,
oh,
and so I was just kind of
so
like, thank
tall.
you, sir. It was like meeting a president or something weird. It was very
He is
surreal.
presidential. He is
He
very
does have
presidential.
he kind of has like a I don't know how to, I don't want to say Bill Clinton, but he has like a he has a vibe where he's just like, hello there. And I was like, this is
Wait, did you just do a Bill Clinton on this?
yeah, that was
Okay.
basically, it was like, nice to meet you, fellow person. He didn't really sound like that, but that was
No,
my,
I'm in love with you right now. That is incredible.
I felt like Forrest Gump meeting one of the presidents in in some to God, some capacity.
You are far from Forrest Gump. Although Tom Hanks, great actor, great role, great everything. So but like the swag you bring, though, the swag you have brought. Everything.
I mean, to everyone that's been so positive, I mean, I can't tell you, for someone who suffers from general anxiety, to be accepted and get so much praise is wonderful and beautiful and validating. And I hope if I get another crack at Gambit, I can still keep bringing that level of joy to people, because it's just he's such a joyful character. I mean, even though he has his levels, every time he talks or does something, as a kid, I'd be sad if Gambit was in an episode and to talk. If he was just in the background doing stuff, yeah. I'm like, no, more Gambit. So, you know, I feel like as a nerd or whatever, we fixate on certain things. Like, there's something about some character who maybe in the background of an episode, or maybe is only one or two, that you cling to because you see something in them. Like, me and my brother are obsessed with Angry Beavers from Nickelodeon, which I feel like nobody else was. And so I was Norbert and he was Daggett. And like, when the show went off the air, we were obsessed and we were like, we need more Angry Beavers content. And it felt like we were just, you know, screaming into the void. But that became our thing because it so represented our relationship as brothers. And then, you know, same thing with Gambit, or, you know, I'm obsessed with Indiana Jones, is you see, not necessarily see yourself in it, but there's something about this person that you want to be, I think, to a lot of degree. And you use them, there's a comfort to them. There's a comfort to characters that you love, and getting to see them makes us both feel like we're okay, and yet also something to aspire to. And to be in a part of his journey and to have people accept it is absolutely unreal. And at no point will I ever accept it. I still feel like I'm waiting in line with everyone else to be like, you know, to view all this. The fact that I get to participate and help make it is surreal. Surreal is not even, I wish there was a bigger word than surreal. Cosmically unfathomable. I don't know.
I love that. That's the name of your memoir right there.
Yes, cosmically unfathomable. Yes, perfect.
So tell us the elevator pitch of a little kid called Anthony Jr., who's growing up in New Jersey, which we talked about this before we hit record. I'm in Hoboken right now. And what was it like to want to be an actor growing up?
Well, I don't think I did. Or if I did, I was in denial about it. I remember my parents being my parents are very like weird about, they were like, you don't want to be an actor, you'll grow up being a loser, is basically the word I
that
heard,
was a
phrase.
Mindset. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. If you become an actor, you'll be a loser was basically the phrase. It was loser, loser, loser was the thing I would hear all the time. So I still have a lot of identity issues with acting. And you'll be poor, you know, you'll never make it, like all this stuff. And which is funny because I know my dad is very much so a repressed performer, where he does like financial advice and stuff. He's a financial planner, but he's always performing. And and I know that there's this feeling of wanting to do that. And so I think at some point, once they saw me starting to do it, they accepted it. Now it's the thing of like, why aren't you in movies? Call up Kevin Feige. Like, my mom literally the other day, she was like, call up Kevin Feige and say you want to be in the movies. And I'm like, that's not how that works. I can't just call up Kevin Feige. And sorry, I'm like spitting. I'm like, that's not how that works, Mom. It's so frustrating because no matter what I do, it's still not quite to their level of their what their expectation is. Like, the worst thing is I go, oh, Mom, I'm on this show. Like, it's a really big hit. And she's like, what theater can I go to watch it? And I'm like, no theater. Doesn't exist. Disney Plus, can I get that on the Hulus? And I'm like, kind of. My whole life I was always told on the Hulus.
I'm literally peeing myself right now, bro. That is hysterical. When my mom once said, like, how do I connect to the Wi-Fis? Like, it is hysterical, bro.
It's so, if there's something about Jersey where like you add an S or remove an S from thing. Nordstrom's, like, I thought it was Nordstrom's until I actually just recently went to one. I went, oh, it's Nordstrom. Like, that's,
oh wow. I don't even know the difference. I thought it was Nordstrom's.
I didn't know there, like, wasn't an S. Maybe they're different in New Jersey. They were like, let's add a little cheeky S to the end of this. But
in Miami, it's Starbucks and Barnes and Nobles.
So, okay. Is it different? What? So it's not Starbucks?
It's Starbucks in Miami. Yes. Starbucks and then Barnes and Nobles and not Barnes and Noble.
That makes my brain hurt. But anyway, to go back to your question, no, I made films and stuff with like my dad's camera that I broke, and he was just like, here, take it. And so I would shoot like little Jurassic Park movies and, you know, things like that with like little action figures. And so I wanted to make films, and I went to school for film. And I somehow fell into this weird loophole where I, or not loophole, this rabbit hole where for 1 year for Halloween, I was like, I'm gonna do Jack Sparrow. And I'm just gonna go all out and do Jack Sparrow. And I did it for like the New York parade, like 1 year, and you know, the big Halloween parade. And people were literally handing me business cards asking me to do their like kids' birthday parties and stuff. And I was like, huh, this is more than a costume. And so for a little while, I was just like flying around doing parties and like Planet Hollywood openings and different things as Jack Sparrow. So it was this kind of
That's
weird.
insane.
It's insane. It's insane. I
What
was getting like,
years were this?
I want to say 2007, 2006, 2009. I
By
don't
the way,
remember.
I miss a Halloween parade in New York, 2008, 2009, that era. It was like lit.
It was crazy. I mean, it
Like
was
those were
nuts.
some fun times.
Oh, that's so good and so insane. Like, talk about like just like crowds and costumes and
Yeah.
sweat and heat. It was just nuts. It didn't matter how cold it was because you were in just a wall of body heat. But yeah, so that was kind of my first
Gotcha.
introduction to that, is I was just basically paying my way through college by being Jack Sparrow, which was not, you know, there were times where I'd be like, I can't believe I'm doing this, because I feel like I'm such an introvert that when I'd go do that stuff, it was so the opposite of who I am that it was like really weird. And I think that kind of planted the seed of like, performing is kind of fun. And then, not to make this story too long, but like after college, I was deeply depressed, and I had a friend who lived out in LA, and she was like, I need a roommate. And my mom was like, just go move to LA. And I was like, good, because I'm tired of being cold. I had like, at some point, I like wiped my windshield and there was a sheet of ice and like cut my hand open and there was just blood everywhere. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't be in New Jersey and New York bleeding and freezing. And so I moved to New York, or moved to LA like on a whim. And like the week I got there, I found out that I had called the Back to the Future company, Telltale Games, as Marty McFly, left a message. They called me back and were just like, can you audition for real? And I was like, okay. So like the week I got there, I got this audition, did it, got it. And then like the next week was flying up north to San Rafael to do the Back to the Future game with Christopher Lloyd. And it was just like, what is happening? So
What
that was
was it
really
like mi
surreal.
meeting Christopher Lloyd?
Weird. Really, really, really weird. I mean,
What do you even say to him? Like when you
nothing.
meet
He
him,
doesn't
you're like,
talk a
"Hey, I'm
lot.
your new Marty." Like,
Yeah, it was really, really strange. He's also excruciatingly quiet. Like, very, like, talk about introverted. He kind of validated my feelings about not wanting to. I love performing, but I'm not necessarily a performer in my day to day. Like, I am with friends and stuff when I'm comfortable, but like, I'm not dying to jump out in front of a crowd. It's just not my thing. I'm more excited like being at home sculpting, or you know, having like a really solid conversation with one person. So, and he's like that, where like I got to meet him a bunch of times where we were sort of like sharing like the booth and doing different things. And at some point we were just talking during lunch, and he finally like started to open up, and we talked about like how he was almost killed by like a log on a tractor trailer or something, like weird stories like
God.
that when he was a kid. And I was like, interesting. But it was weird. I mean, weird doesn't, again, I've had a lot of really, really, really weird experiences, and there is no, whatever the membrane is that allows you to accept them, I've not been able to pierce. All those things are just floating around in my head going, huh, that's weird. Like I got to do, one of my dreams as a kid was to play the Johnny B. Goode, like at the Enchantment or the Sea Dance. I would just, for some reason, over and over again, I would picture that in my head as like a thing I wanted to do. And then they asked me for the 30th or 25th anniversary, whatever it was, one of the anniversaries, like, do you want to play Johnny B. Goode on stage at the actual location for Back to the Future? And I was like, well, yeah. And so, like, and it was the only song I knew on guitar. So I literally, that was the only song, because I would just play that over and over and over again. And so, yeah, anyway, there's no way for me to absorb these things other than to be thankful. And just every time someone asks me about like voiceover or anything they're passionate about, I'm like, just be obsessed with things. It doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's healthy and as long as it's something you're really passionate about. It could be like labels on a soda can, or like toy boxes, or whatever it is. Like, if you're passionate enough about it, and I think you'll eventually move your way towards those things. Because, I mean, who the hell's listening to Billy Barty at 2 a.m. in their closet trying to replicate his voice? You know, like, that's such a strange thing to be obsessed with. Or Han Solo, like, or Indiana Jones. Like, I, you know, would listen to Indy's voice over and over and over again. So when I, you know, got the audition for Han and stuff, I was like, oh my God, I've been practicing this my whole life. So
You're like, I'm ready. Hold my beer.
yeah, exactly. Anyway, what was I just, yeah. Well, I don't even remember what the questions are, and I do that a lot where I'm like, let me just talk
No,
about
it's okay. I mean,
stuff.
listen, you are a podcaster's dream come true because it's just like I
Thank
just
you.
batter up and like you hit a home run with
Oh,
every
thank you.
response. You're so, I mean, your energy is so infectious, and this is
Well,
again
thank you.
emblematic of why everyone loves you as Gambit. But okay, you met Chris. Did you meet Michael J. Fox?
No, which
No.
I'm still gutted about. I wish, I hope that one day I can meet him in some capacity. I know he's heard my voice because we did a scene together. Spoilers. I mean, the game's like
Yeah.
14 years old now.
No, he
There's a
played
scene
like
where
the older Marty and like your
Marty
dad.
and
Yeah.
yeah, and so it's or not the dad. He just plays older Marty who comes back from the future. So I know
Gotcha.
that he's aware that I exist as a human being, but we've never been in the same room together. I've gotten to
He's
meet
never
Rob
slid into
Hill.
your DMs.
No, not yet. I wish he would. I wish he'd try to catfish me or whatever people are trying to get in my DMs. but one day, God, I hope. I would love that, but it was more important to me at the time, like where I was like, I really want to meet him, but now I also understand that there's a certain amount of like when a celebrity meets you, unless they really want to connect with you, unless they have some real reason for you guys to exist or talk, they're just kind of like, all right, whatever. And I don't know if he'd be
That's
that
fair.
way, but like I was lucky with Christopher Lloyd that we had this thing we were working on together. So we were both striving towards making this seem as authentic and Back to the Future like as possible. So there was this mutual understanding that like we're trying to do this together. But with Michael J. Fox, it would just be me going, oh my God, I love you. I do have his autograph because my mom saw him on an airplane once and he signed an autograph for me. So I do have that on like a little
Wait, did she
crappy
see
lined.
him at New York?
I think it was Newark. Like flying out
Okay.
of Newark
Okay, I'm
and
just
she like
that's my
snuck up to
airport
first
and I love
class.
it. Really, I love
It's
that.
I hate it and I love it. I've
Well,
definitely
have you
been
been
there
to
more.
Terminal A yet?
I haven't been there in years. I
Okay,
kind of was
Terminal A
like,
in Newark is amazing right now.
that's so funny. The
Just
last
like the
time I was
F1.
there, I went to the Jamba Juice and they asked for my name and I said Optimus Prime. And the guy was trying, he was like, Optimus? Optimus? That's my primary last memory of Newark. But
Okay, well, that's
anyways.
a great memory to have, though.
But that's where I used to fly out of when we'd go to like Disney World or if I was doing a Jack Sparrow thing, was always Newark.
So, I think I read on the internet that as a kid, you were told you sound like Michael J. Fox quite a bit. Was
Yes.
it a personal victory in 2010 when you had just moved to LA, and you
Yeah.
auditioned for, and I believe the story goes that you had just saw like this call for it, or a friend told you about it. You went on the website, you uploaded like a WAV file or whatever the file was, and you sent it
Yeah.
off there. Like, I mean, what is it like for that kid who was told he sounds like Marty McFly actually being Marty McFly? I mean, that's a huge, I mean, I don't want to get spiritual on you, but like one would take that as like an omen at that
I mean,
point.
to say it's funny, I was talking to my friend, Cree Summer, who's a voice actress, who's
Yeah, of
a
course.
goddess and a beautiful human being. I was, but she, her and I, she's played my mom twice. She was my mom in The Croods, and then in Voltron, she played Hagar or Hagar? Hagar. Okay, I always mispronounce that and get in trouble. But I told her before I got the audition, and I don't think I've ever said this online, I had this really surreal dream. Before this was announced, that I was with Doc in some on some sort of adventure, and there was this, I don't know what sparked this, but I have forgotten about this until I spoke to Cree about it. Was this surreal, very, very realistic dream where I did some sort of adventure with Doc Brown, and once it was over, there was this like moment where I was like, I'm really gonna miss you. I was like, I hope we have another adventure together. He's like, we will, Marty. And I was like, oh, thanks, Doc. And then he went off, and then not long after that is when I had the. I heard about the game. Someone told me about it. I called him up, and it still is one of the most vivid dreams I've ever had in my life, which is surreal. And this sort of, I kind of buried it. I forgot about it until many, many years later. And when I got it, I mean, there's no words for it. I mean, it's like it blew my eyebrows off. I was like blown away by how surreal and insane it was. And just to participate and be Marty for a certain project, and it was essentially a sequel, was unreal. And then I remember Cree basically saying like, that's a sign, baby. And I was like, thank you. She's like, that's a gift from, your spiritual side. Whatever she says in her Cree voice, where she's like, baby, that's a sign. You were supposed to do this. And I'm like, thank you, Cree. Korea's beautiful. She once ran across traffic to jump through my window to hug me and my girlfriend. We saw
Stop it. That's
her, and she
incredible.
jumped across two lanes of traffic. And I was like, "Oh my God, she's gonna die!" And she's like, "Baby!" And like ran in and literally dove through my window to like give us a kiss and a hug. And it was, I was like, "Oh my," because like she's very distinct looking. She's got a hat and the braids, and you know exactly who that is. This giant sunglasses, and I was like, "Cray!" And she like literally like ran across traffic. It was very
In
funny.
LA, LA traffic.
In LA traffic,
Oh my
we were on
God.
Sunset, and I was like, "Is that Cree eating at that restaurant?" And so I yelled her name, and then she just like took off and jumped through my window. It was really funny. Anyway, I can imagine what that must look like for people behind us. We just see her legs sticking out the window. She's like reaching to the driver's side to kiss me, and like she's beautiful. Anyway, surreal. That's the answer. It's all surreal. I have no word outside of that until someone comes up with a stronger word. I got nothing. Yeah, it's all very strange, and I'm again very thankful.
Okay. Wait, so that was like the impetus. So, I mean, 2010, doing
Yeah.
Back to the Future, that was the impetus for a lot of your career movements. I mean, I know you were doing video game sketch comedy, which I was obsessed with. I was looking at some of the YouTube videos the other
Video game
day.
sketch comedy. You mean Funhouse?
What was it? What's up? What you playing, Ash?
Oh, that's just my friends. They would just grab me for, I was barely involved in that in the sense that like, hey Ash, what you playing? Those are just
Yeah,
friends of
there you go.
mine that they're like, do you want to be in this random thing? I was like, yeah, sure. We happen to work together at Game Trailers and Spike, which was like the same umbrella. So we were all working at
Yeah.
Spike together. And they would just ask me, like, you want to do this thing? I was like, okay. So it was, yeah.
And after Back to the Future, you went to Game Trailer, right? Is that do I have that
Yes.
continuity
So
correct? Okay.
I mean, because doing one video game doesn't exactly pay the bills. So it's like I did the video game, and then one of the producers on a segment we did behind the scenes with Spike was like, do you want a job as an editor? And I was like, I'm not doing anything else right now. So I needed to still eat. So I went and was an editor for 2 or 3 years at Game Trailers before I started doing more voiceover work, because it took that long to get anyone to not just see me as a one-trick pony, because I had to prove that I could do more than Marty McFly, which is a long process. Like, I think people imagine I just exploded onto the scene. I literally, like, I did one thing, that was it. And then I had to figure out how to parlay that into an entire career, which was excruciating.
Well, how does
It's,
one
yeah.
figure it out, though? Like,
I just kept asking and kept trying to get, do different impressions or do different voices and trying to get someone to look at me and trust that I could do more than that one thing. And so eventually, I was in AFTRA because of the, the game they had Taft Hart lead me in, which means they're basically like, we want this guy, we'll pay for his dues. And then a friend of mine, this is, I don't think this is interesting to anyone at all, but a friend of mine who I worked in the Back to the Future game recommended me to my current agency, and they were like, call us if you become SAG. And I was like, okay. So like a year later, SAG and AFTRA merged, and then I was like, I'm in SAG. So they were like, all right, come on in. And so that was, and I'm still with them. They're great. But it was a series of very fortunate events, thankfully.
so when did you land Voltron?
I don't remember. I do remember I was in some sort of improv class at the time, and I had to tell them I couldn't do it anymore. And I was really, they wouldn't give me my money back. And I was really mad
Would
at them
be
for that.
so furious about
I
that.
was so mad.
I'd be like, I want every penny back right now.
Yes, I was so cranky. Anyway, yeah, that was, I don't remember, but it was when they were doing the first season, but it hadn't launched yet. So whenever the show came out, I was like a year before the very first season dropped. And yeah, that was another league. I didn't realize, to what capacity their fandom is for a show until I did Voltron. And now I'm experiencing this, which is, and even it's a step above that. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Yeah,
I mean,
it was a,
X-Men fandom is pretty big.
it's pretty big. It's great. I mean, I've been part of it for a long time, so to now suddenly be at the other end of
On
it
the
is
other
very
end,
weird.
yeah.
Yeah.
What is there something that surprised you about X-Men fandom?
No. Because I
You're
think
like
that
pretty on
I'm
par.
yeah, I'm already aware of it. I
Yeah.
kind of get where what the appeal is and where everyone is and what kind of fans there are. Like it's, yeah, I kind of knew. I will say the drag shows I love. I didn't know that was a thing. Like X-Men drag was a
Oh,
thing.
it's a really big thing in LA. It's not here on the East Coast, though. So I
Well,
have
you
to
guys
agree
got to
with
bring it
you.
there.
I know because I've seen it. I've seen you guys do your live watch-alongs, and I've seen a lot of like When I've been out there in LA, I've seen some of the performances, but like we don't have that here in like
I didn't know there
Boxers
was that
or like Hell's
crossover.
Kitchen. Yeah,
Yeah, I
same.
didn't. I which I was like, this is great. This makes perfect sense. I mean, the design of the characters and just the content of the show. I was like, yep, that's, I totally get it. I hosted a show as Jack Sparrow once, a drag show. That was really wild, and that was my first introduction to like, oh, this is really cool. But I had no idea that there was like, I know with like Hocus Pocus and stuff, there's a big crossover, but X-Men, I wasn't aware of, and so getting to see all the videos and stuff and costumes, like, this is perfect. This is great.
You obviously do a lot of roles in video games. I mean, like your credits are insane, bro. Did you
Thank you.
always think you were gonna do video games? Did you have other like another like mindset for what you wanted to do? But like you really feel like you've found like this like wonderful career in video game voice acting.
Thank you. Did I think I was into video games? No. I mean, especially pre Back to the Future, I really didn't. But then
Yeah.
it's funny because they're such different beasts. I mean, no, they may not look that way, but you have some people who like almost only do voice acting in shows or almost only do voice acting in video games. And like, I feel
Yeah.
very lucky that I found a way in to video games because it's one thing to voice a video game, it's another thing to do like motion capture and stuff. That's like a whole other breed.
Yeah.
And I remember like being with my brother and us watching behind the scenes of Uncharted and just being like, God, that looks like so much fun. And I got this opportunity randomly through a friend, my friend Chris, who does a lot of the Genshin Impact games. We were working on Star Ocean, and he asked me, he's like, hey dude, I'm doing this thing. It's like a test for dubbing, like a dubbing a German show or something. He's like, it's not paid. Can you just come in and help me out? I was like, cool, no problem. And so I did the thing, and it, they put together their package. And then like not long after that, one of the people that was working on that project, my friend Hope, was like, I need someone to sub in for Atreus, or for Atreus, the son of Kratos, just for the like the God of War previs. Does that make sense? So it's basically before they build the game, they have people come in and act it out and figure out what the scenes are and the blocking. And so my buddy Chris was like, hey, remember that guy that came in for the session? Like, just hire him. And so I was like, all right. And so they called me, and I remember my agent being like, you probably shouldn't do this. This is like kind of like grunt work. And I was like, no. I've always wanted to do mocap. And so it started off where it's just like me and my jeans running around in this empty office space with a guy with a camcorder, which felt real sketchy to like getting to actually be a character in the game like 2 or 3 years later. So it was this like, hundreds of hours. And it's funny, that's actually where I met Matthew, who's Magneto. Is we became friends because we were working on God of War together, and he was Kratos and I was his son. So there was this whole funny dynamic where he was like, boy, I need you to go get this, and his like his pseudo British accent. And and he was just like, yeah, okay, dad, running around. And so that's how we started as friends, was just doing that and sweating our asses off in these really uncomfortable mocap suits in an un-air-conditioned office at Sony Santa Monica. They thankfully eventually started moving us over to the mocap stage where it's more temperature controlled. But just like at some point, I almost passed out because it was so hot in there and the suits were so thick and old. But yeah, that was a dream. I mean, I was so excited to go there every day and do that. So that was, I feel like, another level of like, okay, now I'm really doing video games as opposed to just being some guy that's like, get down in the background of some game where no one cares that you're in it. But yeah, video games are so much fun.
Well, you just broke the entire internet right now by saying that Magneto in another life was
Was
Gambit's
my daddy.
daddy. It
Yeah, it
was
was
your
Gambit's
daddy.
daddy. Yeah, we've had a lot of fun, weird adventures of just us. I tried to find a photo of it because I'm sure it exists of like him carrying me or something, where because he's significantly bigger than me. Like, he's a tall dude, and we have a very funny dynamic, especially in those roles, because I'm always trying to crack him and he's always trying to crack me to some degree, and it's very funny. He's great. I love him to death.
Did you guys record X-Men 97 together? Or I think you
Sadly,
said
no.
for. No. Okay.
Yeah, because we I was lucky to record some stuff with Lenore, but we mostly were kept apart because of the pandemic and stuff, and it was
Yeah.
just too, it's too chaotic. And we started not like maybe early 2021, I think. So it was still kind of while we were figuring it out.
So when you're listening to voices that came before you, other actors who have done interpretation of the characters, whether it's Gambit, Gizmo, Owen from Jurassic Park,
Oh yeah,
Han
I did that a lot
Solo.
too.
I mean, has Chris Pratt ever sent you a gift basket for your performance?
No. Of course not. I've done so many of his things now. It's crazy. It's really wild. If you go to Legoland, that's all me, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I love that character. He's such a fun character. And it's, but no, I did tweet at him once years ago where I was just like, hey, that's me or something and your thing. He doesn't care. He's got other people checking his stuff for him, I'm sure. If I could afford that, I would too. If I was just like, can someone else check my Twitter? This stresses me out.
I mean, listen. Well, I hope your Twitter's full of love, as is your Instagram.
It is right now. Again, I know. There's just a lot of screaming on Twitter all the time, especially the last Wednesday morning. Just people like, no, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So.
We actively avoid Twitter, X, whatever it's called here. But yes, we felt that on your behalf. But my question being, like, when you're listening to these voices and you're sort of want to respect what came before, what are you latching onto when you're trying to observe the performance? When you were that little AJ in the closet listening to Han Solo over and over again, what are you latching onto with these voices?
I mean, I think it often comes with a sound. I still have these discoveries now where, like, you hear a sound and you accidentally make it, or you'll just be like in your day to day. Like, I know probably one of like the weirdest and rawest experiences in that case where one of my friends made this game called 30 Flights 11, where it's a world full of Jeff Goldblums, and this is like an alternate mode. And he was like, can you do a Jeff Goldblum impression? And I was like, no, give me a day. And so he was like, but it's just Jeff Goldblum noises. And I was like, what? And he was like, it's all the silly noises he makes, and that's the only way they communicate. So I just listened to his stuff over and over again. And it's kind of like tuning a guitar, where I heard, I was like, ah, all right, oh, you know, the sound that he makes. And so then finding other things he does, oh, yes, down here and right, and trying to find those things, those noises, because Han Solo or Harrison Ford does the same thing, where sometimes he'll just be like, listen, I'm going in here. I go, hey, right, Chewie. You know, there's different noises that everyone makes in their day-to-day. You know, Michael J. Fox is all up here, and everything's, you know, Doc, Doc, there's this sound, and trying to tune yourself to that is the base of it. But then the thing is, and this is the catch, or what's so difficult with when you see like impression videos, is like someone can get one line. It's very easy to eventually develop, you know, a single moment. But it's when you take it off road and you're paving your own path, where now you need to do it through. Like, I'll drive through LA and I'll just read signs as Gambit or as Han Solo. I'll just, whatever's in front of me, because you'll discover where your weak points are, where you go, that doesn't sound right, you know? And then so you have to go backtrack and go, why doesn't that sound right? And, you know, with all those voices, the same thing. It's just sounds just over and over and over again, and finding where they live. And some are very joyful. Like, I love doing Han Solo, because it's like, it's a resonance that's very comfortable and feels very good. Same with Gambit or Lotor. I mean, Lotor was his own thing, but like, there's, you know, sitting in that voice and doing a British accent is very satisfying. You know, it's almost self-soothing in a way. So, yeah, that's the start of it, to answer your question, is sounds. And finding like three or four sounds that this person makes, and trying to keep yourself within that world. Because once you stray, people can hear it and they don't like it. And I, as a fan of voice matches, who enjoy a really good voice match, I'm always looking for that, seeing if that person gets it or if they're off, you know. It's a game. It's a really fun game. Or it's like listening to someone play your favorite song. If they start playing the wrong notes, you hear it.
Okay, so
sorry, I thought one of my dogs showed up.
No worries. Ducky, is that the name?
Ducky,
of your...
yes. Ducky and Batty, Ducky are my Batty. Two little crazy chihuahuas.
Favorite thing about being a parent to your dogs, Ducky and Batty.
Favorite thing. Oh my God. I mean, I'm constantly laughing at them. I think that's the thing, is like getting this little thing that you just, that loves you so much and you love them. I mean, there's nothing that I can equate it to. And it's all silliness. Everything they do is so stupid and silly and weird. And I've also, I guess my favorite thing really is, I never had a relationship with a pet where there was a give and take, or there was a back and forth, where I know if I look at one of them, they're communicating a specific thing to me. Like, as a kid, I would always imagine pets were just sort of this thing on the periphery. Like, we had animals or pets growing up, but there was never like a deep connection. This is the first time in my adult life I was like, oh my God, you're communicating with me all the time. There is a language you're speaking that I guess was too young to understand or wasn't able to forge because I was just too immature. But that's the thing that's the most surreal and beautiful is like, oh, you're like a toddler who's always demanding things and like being like, I'm scared now. Like there's all these cute things that they're doing to talk to you. And I just wasn't aware of that. I mean, whether it's my own ignorance or not. It's changed my life for the better. And now every time I see a dog, I'm like, ah! It immediately opens up that part of my brain where I'm like, let me save you.
I love that you said that because my boys are sadly no longer with us, but
Sorry.
there was this, thank you. It's painful, but I am so proud because much like you, I grew up with dogs and animals in my household. But when I was finally responsible, when I was growing my own family, it was incredible because we could communicate.
Yes.
And like Apollo, who's Spider Pom to the familia at home, he
Oh.
could there was a bark he would let out, and I knew what he needed. He needed water, he needed food, he needed to go to the bathroom, he needed to go walk. He was blind. And
Oh.
similarly with Vic, who was my eldest, I knew his movement would just with a little bit of like a sound, he would make it go, burr. And I'd be like, oh, he wants his salchichas, he wants like a treat or something like that. And it's incredible, like the way we sort of communicate with these beings when we're so close. And I love, I discovered your Instagram recently for them. And was it DuckTales? Which
Yes,
a Disney
DuckyTales.
reference,
That's
like
my
DuckyTales.
partner runs that. She's the one that's
Okay.
responsible for most of that. I do will occasionally be like, all right, put this one up there.
What's her name? What's her name?
Erica.
Erica, thank you so much for DuckyTales. Thank you, Erica. You're the real MVP today.
Yes, she is. It's so great. I mean, they do so many dumb things that maybe mean, you're like, I hope this means something to someone else. But yeah, that's that. Honestly, I feel that so deeply is the feeling of. I think humans have this superiority complex where we feel like no one can communicate with me. I am a human. You can't talk. And it's like, no, they're,
They're brilliant.
she's Erica works a lot with animals, like rehabilitating animals and stuff and like different shelters and things. And just the constant stories and feelings of like, yeah, they're just communicating all the time. They're always communicating. It's the fact that we haven't been listening for most of our lives. And
Agreed.
it's such a it's and it's so funny. I feel like so many people are like, ah, whatever, like I'm gonna go eat a pig now, and it's like, no, you don't understand. They're trying to communicate, and we are closing it off because we have this primal need for meat or for validation or whatever it is that it breaks my heart when you see like a guard dog or something. It's like, no, that dog wants to be loved. You've abused
Yes,
it
I
to the
agree
point of
with you
it.
so much,
Yeah.
man.
It's so painful. It kills me. If I was very rich, it would just be Chihuahuas and different dogs like all over me all the time. Like that's my, if there's a dog in the room, that's my focus. And so, yeah, I can't understate how important that's become to my life is that connection and that feeling of like, oh, I'm an idiot. I'm a moron for not seeing this earlier. And I wish I had, in my youth. But I think unfortunately the culture my dad comes from and my mom, where they're very like Jersey Italian. Dogs were furniture. It was essentially like they were a thing you got because that was sort of a standard. It was like getting married was like a thing you had to do. It wasn't necessarily romantic so much as it was like you have to do this. And I think that having a dog was kind of like that. It's like, ah, bring the hound in, throw them some slop. And I think we still very much so come from that. And it's, as we become more empathetic as human beings, hopefully more people will experience that. And some people are. Have known that for a long time, but for me and my shitty Jersey family, that's always the way it's been. As a dog, is this, you hear the phrases of like they treated me like a dog. I don't understand that phrase. Treating someone like a dog is like I wrap them in blankets and feed them peanut butter and pet them, until they fall asleep. That's what treating like a dog is to me. Is like how much love can I fit into this creature?
A lot. A lot is the answer there.
I constantly am. I feel like I'm always grabbing them and going, "How can I tell you I love you in another way?" Like it's so, yeah. It's all pervasive. Yeah.
Okay, well, speaking about hounds and empathy, what was it like meeting Cal Dodd?
I think he couldn't care less that I existed, which is exactly what I want from Wolverine. I think he literally was just like, "Hey,
Did you
Gumball," and
meet
like
him
that
at
was
the
it.
97 premiere? Is that where you met him?
No, he was. I met him at the IGN thing we did that was like 3 weeks prior or
Oh,
something, or like a week
gotcha.
prior.
Yeah.
So it
And you
was
did
like
that
that
with
was our
Lenore,
first
right?
meeting. Yes, it was Lenore, Ray, Holly, and Cal. And I think he's over it in the best way. Like he's just like, yeah, whatever, I'm Wolverine. But in a way that's not mean. He's just very like, how you imagine Harrison Ford is, where he's just like, yeah, whatever, kid. He just is. He's happy to be there, but he's also, I think, underwhelmed by us, and I love that. That's exactly what I want from him, is him just be like, whatever, gumbo, it's great. And I mean that with all the love, because if he was like, hey, I'm Wolverine, I'd be like, I want you
You're
to be
like, no,
cranky.
no, 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 no,
I
no,
want
like
you to
back
be
off.
cranky in a playful way, and he plays it really beautifully. He's very sweet and very funny in his own Wolverininess, and I love that.
Although on the opposite end, though, we've had the opportunity to meet Hugh Jackman very casually. I feel Hugh Jackman is more of that warm, welcoming, like, hey,
Oh,
what's
totally.
going on?
You
You
could
know what I
see that
mean?
in his performances, though, as he very much so exudes a sort of like, there's a sweetness and a kindness to him that is just. The idea that he's a theater guy doing Wolverine, you very much so feel that. It's like he's like, I just want to be singing, and it's like, yeah, I get that.
I just want to
It
be the
adds
boy
a,
from Oz.
yeah, exactly. And I love that about him. One day I would love to run into him at in some capacity, but
What,
he
you haven't run into him at the Marvel Studios? He's
oh
not
no,
just
I'm
hanging
always
out there
hanging
with
out
Ryan
there.
Reynolds in the cafeteria?
Yeah, no, that's where I am every day. I don't think I could get in if I asked, but the fact that they would be there, I don't know. Where am I going with this?
Explain a spoop to me.
Okay, so spoops are these things that I do that are unrelated to everything. I love Halloween. It's one of my biggest obsessions, and I wanted to make Halloween decorations back when I was doing, like, as working as an editor, and then I started to make these little creatures. I don't think I have one in here. I don't. They're basically this my idea of what the spirits of Halloween would be like, and
I
I
love that.
just made them for me. And then once Voltron took off, someone went deep into my Instagram and found them and was like, "Where do I buy these?" And I was like, "You don't." I was like, "You can make one, like by all means, go ahead, make one." And enough people piled on it, and it became a thing on Tumblr. And I was like, "All right, I'll try to make some." So I taught myself how to cast in resin, and I
Like
basically
how?
just.
Did you just like watch a YouTube video
I
on
watched
that?
Craftsman. You know Craftsman, like
No,
who's
not at all.
look up Craftsman. He's one of my favorite YouTubers. It's the Craftsman show. He's a puppet who makes things. If you haven't watched Craftsman, it is the greatest gift I can give anyone who's listening. Like, stop what you're doing, turn this off, go watch Craftsman. Sorry.
It's
Don't turn
fine.
this
Don't
off.
worry. I
Don't
say
turn this
that
off.
all
It's
the time.
so warm and lovely, and he's just a delight. But he makes things, and he did this video about how to cast in silicone and resin, and that was kind of the start of like, okay, I could figure this out. And basically, just I did like 10 of them, and then put them up on eBay or Etsy, and they sold out really fast. And I was like, all right, let me try 30, and then the same thing happened, and I was like, maybe more, and then they sold out, and people were like, make more designs. So I did. And then the next one, it was like a cat or something. I don't remember what the next one was. Like that sold out really fast. And I was maybe like 30 at a time because I was making them all in my kitchen, which I didn't realize is highly toxic.
Oops.
I'm learning.
Erica is like
Oops,
shaking
oops.
her
Yeah.
head. So
I
is
know.
like
There's
Ducky
I had
and
to like
everyone.
scrape resin off our kitchen counter. It's bad. But it just became this thing that just kept going and going and going. And now thankfully I'm in the middle of a pre-order, so I had a pre-order and it was the biggest one I've done before, so I'm still casting them, and that's a
Yeah,
whole
you're
thing.
sold out. I try to order one.
I'm sorry. I have to do it in batches or I'll lose my mind, because it's like if I had a constant rolling thing where they were always being ordered, I would never be able to fulfill them. I could basically have to like do an order for like a couple days or a week at the maximum, close it, and then make them over the course of however many months. Etsy says I have 90 days to ship everything out, which is never, I can never get it done that quickly. And
That's
then I
unfair,
paint them
Etsy.
all. I know Etsy needs to fix their stuff.
Yeah,
But
thanks.
they basically I paint them all, and then they get packaged and sent out, but they're my little sort of homage to Spoops. And right now there's canonically, I think there's like 23 of them right now,
I love
different
that you have your
designs.
own universe of
I
like
do have my own little weird universe that
spoops.
I keep and maintain that is totally unrelated to voice acting. Yeah.
Okay, you also have you're also a doodler, and you have another
Yes.
store where you have stickers,
Oh, I don't
dinosaurs.
maintain that anymore.
Oh, you
But like,
don't?
well, I just kind
Okay.
of like, there was a period of time where I was like, I'm drawing now. And then Spoops kind of became more of a thing. And I was like,
Okay.
I love drawing, but only for fun. And I found that drawing to create a finished product is very frustrating. So it became more of a something I used to ideate instead of like, and here's a finished drawing, because I was losing my mind. I find drawing to be extremely frustrating. Sculpting is way more freeing to me because it's three-dimensional. And if you sculpt a bird, it looks like a bird. Where if you draw a bird, you're doing all kinds of mental math to sort out foreshortening and all that stuff, and it just makes me crazy.
All right, two really quick random questions before we
Please.
get to our listener questions. Favorite Jurassic Park movie?
Jurassic Park. Next question.
Uh,
What kind of question is
video,
that?
video game everyone should play.
Super Mario World.
Oh, I do love
I
Super Mario World.
love Super Mario World. I think it's a perfect game. I'm trying to think of what else. I mean, obviously Resident Evil 4.
Are you a
Uncharted
Zelda fan
2.
by any chance?
I am. Breath of the Wild, I think, is one of my favorite games of all time. Dark
Did we
Souls. I love
Dark
Dark
Souls?
Souls. That's
Yeah.
which I know is a high bar to entry, but Dark Souls 1 is one of my favorite things in the universe. I have replayed that game so many times, and it's so punishing, but I love it more than I love most things. It's so good.
All right, so we have a couple of listener questions here, and Chasm12 wants to know, what's your favorite Gambit look of all time?
I mean, I'm really look of all time is that classic, the 90s look. What the current look, I love what Amelia did, who the designs for the current Gambit is just it's perfect. I messaged her when I got it or when I first saw the image, and I was like, this is it. You figured it out. This is the perfect Gambit. Because it is all the things that I wanted as a kid, like all the toys and all the images, like the sort of on model Gambit for what the ideal animated Gambit should look like, to me, is what that concept art or what the current iteration is, which is, I know sounds like self congratulatory or self, but I'm like, that's it. That's what I want. I want to eat that. It's like, it's so beautiful. You like, it's tangibly, what's the word I'm looking for? It's viscerally delicious. Viscerally delicious. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I don't know. This look, I have one from college that's just chilling here. This guy, I just want
Oh,
everything
that's
to
the
look like
Eagle
this.
Moss. Those are
Is it?
toxic. Those are like the lead-based figures.
Are they?
Be careful.
I mean, yeah, this is, speaking of delicious, this is what I'm constantly eating this, so maybe I will stop doing
Oh,
it. Are they
I used
toxic? It's from
yeah, I
2006, so yeah.
yeah, they are. I used to work at Marvel and they had a bin full of these lead-based figures and I brought them here. My husband, who's very OCD, was like, those are lead-based figures. You shouldn't be
That's
touching them.
fine. We're not, I'm not
Anyway.
an infant or whatever it is. I'm not worried about it. I feel like
I
it's
mean,
only.
listen, 4 decades later, I'm still here, so like it's
It's
fine.
fine.
Okay. Thick double C Southern Girls wants to know, how does it
Okay.
feel to be such a heartthrob and so beloved for your role as Gambit?
Is that what's going on? I mean, I know
I'm sorry,
Gambit is.
AJ, I'm sorry, everyone's in love with you. Like the secret's out on the internet.
Well, surreal, and I don't, my little brain can't handle that or can't take that in. I love it and I appreciate it, and that is awesome to hear. I'm so glad I've fooled you all into believing such a thing. I've learned when it comes to like imposter syndrome and like that feeling of like, really? You think that was good or whatever? Like, okay, it's just to be thankful and accept it and just be like, that means a lot to me and that's awesome. And heartthrob, huh? That's really cool.
Like you are the Jonathan Taylor Thomas of the X-Men. Congratulations.
Sure, I'll take it. That's awesome. I don't know what to say to that other than I feel like Matthew needs more attention, maybe. I don't know if people have really gotten a hold on how beautiful Matthew is, but every time we've worked together, I feel like someone leaves and goes, "Who is that tall ginger Captain America that we just worked with?" And I'm like, "He's married, but I agree, he's very attractive." Don't tell Matthew I said
Well, I
that.
mean, speaking of Matthew, though, he did submit a question and he asked,
What? Of course he
who
did.
likes Brendan Fraser more, you or him?
Oof, that's tough. That's tough because we have had this conversation multiple times. Well, his thing is George of the Jungle. Like he loves George of the Jungle. He's like, it's a perfect film. It's a perfect movie. And I'm like, I gotta rewatch it. It's been years since I've seen it, but I love The Mummy. If it's not aware by my cosplays on Instagram, love The Mummy, and he's perfect in that movie. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen Matthew dress up as him, so I'm gonna go with me. Also, there's this really, really funny knockoff t-shirt going around where I posted it like a year ago where it's It says Brendan Fraser, and it's a picture of him and a picture of me in cosplay. And I don't know how this happened, but someone made a t-shirt and thought I was Brendan Fraser and put it on this t-shirt. And like one of my friends discovered it in the wild while they were like working at a bar. And they were like, that's not Brendan Fraser. That's my friend AJ. And so I think maybe I'm the bigger fan, Matthew.
Oh, there you go. Listen, Gambit versus Magneto, that's how we're going to end this episode right
Yeah,
there.
is who's the biggest Brendan Fraser fan?
That is
But
who Rogue Who? It's all about Brendan
Rogue,
Fraser
we're
right
all
there.
yeah. Hey, Brendan Fraser, if you're listening, how do we get him on the show or just to like hug me and Matthew? I don't know. I just he seems like the biggest sweetheart. I've loved him since, you know, Encino Man, where he was just like, who is this guy? He's hilarious.
I bedazzled. I loved him in Bedazzled
I
so
love
much
Bedazzled. He's
with
so
Elizabeth.
good. He
Oh,
deserves
God.
more. He's such a versatile actor in a way that I feel like his roles don't really always cater to that. Where he's, I mean, we've seen now. I mean, we have the Renaissance, so now everyone is like,
I
yes.
love the
But like, I remember as a
Renaissance.
kid, yeah, the Renaissance is great.
I'm so
Yeah,
glad
him
someone
and
else is using that phrase in real time because I only
it's
watch it on
fine.
YouTube. So thank you for me.
Yes, of course. Yes, I'm all about that Brendan Fraser love because he seems like a sweetheart, and I mean. Him in Bedazzled is so good. He's so funny and does so many different things. I think it's really easy to overlook how talented someone is when they're effortlessly talented or when they embody something so well. Like I think Tom Wilson from who's Biff in Back to the Future is so good at being that character that we forget he's not the character. You know, like he's so perfect at that role that you forget he's acting. Like he's nothing like that in real life. And yet you know, it's easy to discount him as a talented human being because he so embodies that. And I think in a lot of ways, Brendan Fraser's giving such a great performance in everything he does that it's easy to forget that that is a performance. It's not who he is. I think that goes for a lot of actors where it's very easy to forget that it's not, there's work being done. Yeah.
AJ, before we let you go, I mean, listen, I know the family at home is going to be DMing me. Did he say anything about Gambit and the future? Is there anything you can say about your role in X-Men?
No.
Of course. That
I
is
mean,
fine.
even if
That's
I
fair.
knew something, I couldn't say anything. Like, I would be immediately, the chip in my head would go off and I would just
That's it.
croak.
You just explode right now. That's
Yeah, it's
fair.
funny how many people, maybe that's one of the weirdest things is when I look through those DMs that are like the scary DMs, is people going, do you come back? You have to tell me, do you come back? Do you come back? I'm like,
Yeah.
even if I knew
They're
something.
like, are you Kevin Feige catfishing me right now? Just like
Yes,
testing
exactly. Just to test me. I don't. I God. I hope. I really, really hope that would be for me the dream to just suddenly he's like, just kidding. You know, it would be great. But I don't know. I genuinely don't know anything, and I don't know what. God. I hope so. I hope so. But who knows? This felt so important. Who knows?
Well.
I'm happy to be here for whatever his journey is and was. And you know, I will find out when everyone else finds out. I guess if I just randomly suddenly appear, I'll be like, oh, there I am.
So, where can folks hit you up on the internet?
Instagram is probably where I'm the most active. It's just at AJ underscore Locasio. I really don't like Twitter. I do
No,
use it, but
same.
I really, really dislike it. It is a necessary evil, but if I don't have to check it, I won't. That's probably the safest place because it's mostly just like, here's a bunch of pictures of either me in some cosplay or something silly that I saw. That's kind of it. Right now, it's just Gambit stuff. So, yeah, Instagram. Don't follow me on Twitter. I don't, that place sucks.